Well, I only hope the Lord doesn't come on a rainy day. It might put some of us in trouble. You can think about that a while. We're glad you're here and delighted that you have a concern for spiritual things. I want to read just two verses. Well, maybe it'll be four. From the 9th chapter of Matthew, beginning with verse 35, to which I invite your attention. Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep, having no shepherd. Then he said to the disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, and the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." I'll be speaking tonight about Brazil, but I will have another agenda as I talk about it. As I said a week ago, I am truly grateful to the Christians here for the fellowship in the gospel which you have afforded me for these more than 11 years. And what I have done basically because you made it possible, so that whatever labors I have invested have been yours as well. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to go this second time to Brazil. The Lord had compassion on the people of his time, and it was a very narrow world in which he moved through the synagogues of Galilee and Judea and Samaria. I don't know what the population of the country was, but it couldn't have been much. And though he did sometimes go outside the borders of Palestine, they were infrequent. And he lived his life in the flesh in that very narrow part of the world. But he loved people. And he loved them in that transcendent kind of way that thought about eternity. And any kind of love that does not transcend time is a wholly inadequate kind of love. Not very thoughtful, not very serious. And his love was absolute. As I said, the world in which he moved was small. And in those days, he said, "The laborers are few." I am not sure what he would say about our times. "And the harvest," he said, "is plenteous." I think we face the same challenge. The world we live in, by comparison, is immense. 6 billion people. Enlarging every second and dying every second. But it's difficult, if not impossible, for us to deal with 6 billion people. Those numbers don't touch us. But nearby where we live and where we work, some of those 6 billion people are easily to hand. And they are lost for the most part, just like the world in Jesus' day. But what gives us the great responsibility we have as we confront a lost world is the fact that we know the Lord. And we know the remedy for all this lostness and emptiness and pointlessness. Therefore, if we seek to follow Jesus, We will have compassion on lost men and women, and it will be our central purpose, compelling purpose, while we live on this earth, to talk to other people about Him. It will not be making a living. It will not be getting an education. It will not be obtaining some portion of this world's goods. Those will be some attendant necessities that come alongside what we're about. And I suspect, and I speak from my own spiritual experience, that the greatest challenge we have is coming to the point that in our lives that really is true. That the one thing I want to do while I live is to reach as many people as I can with this story of forgiveness and eternal salvation. Each of us must examine himself in the light of that. Lee Wildman is here tonight. He can tell you something about Brazil. He's been to Brazil this year. It is a remarkable part of the world. That country that you see before you is the sixth largest country in the world. And I know you think you live in a large place and that Texas and Alaska represent some of the great expanses of territory, but this country comes about 300,000 square miles short of being as large as our contiguous 48 states plus Alaska and Texas. It is nearly 4,000 miles in the stretch from the west to the east. And of course, within those miles live people, but most of them inhabit the coastline and the southern part of the country because the Amazon basin is a tropical place that is not exactly Florida. That is to say, people don't run over to Manaus because they think they'll find a nice spot to have a vacation. The mosquitoes are plentiful and the circumstances are not ideal. But people live here. 170 million people live in Brazil, and it is a field which is ripe to the harvest, I believe. About 6 years ago, some young men got an interest in this country. Portuguese is not the language of choice in our country. If we choose a language in the Western Hemisphere, it would likely be Spanish as a second language. And they don't speak Spanish in Brazil. They speak Portuguese. But this country, in its size and its population, makes all the rest of the countries in this region of the world seem smaller. It borders every country in South America except two, Ecuador and Chile. So it touches all this region. And when they decided to go, they went down to Sao Paulo, which is a city of 20 million people. I believe that may be third largest in the world after Tokyo and Mexico City. They are jammed together there because New York City, although it only has about 14, 16 million people, has three times the land area for the same population as does Sao Paulo. So when you get there, you'll see people who seem to love to live cheek by jowl. A city lot, Sao Paulo, in many parts of the city, is about 16 feet wide. And there's no place for a lawn or anything else except house. And one floor will hardly do it. You're going to have to build on that one and then build again, perhaps, when all the children and their children come in, because extended families are still a part of the Brazilian culture. And they'll just build another room or another two rooms, another floor, and bring in the children or they bring in the parents, and whatever may be the case, they live very close together. It might be said about the Brazilians that they don't like to live too far apart, even when they've got all the land that God could allow them, they still want to live very close to each other, and some suggested it's for protection, because in some cases there are some threats to life and property in this country. São Paulo is a state as well as a city, and it would probably make Kentucky look even small. There are 26 states in Brazil, and most of them have not been touched with the purest of gospel preaching, I would say. I don't know. That's my judgment. God knows. We sometimes get so sure about where God has been busy and where the gospel is gone because we don't know anything about it, and that's a little presumptuous probably, and I'm making that statement with that realization. But a year and a half after they entered the city and were working in Imbu-Guaçu, which is on the southern part of the city, nothing much happening. Meeting with some Christians, converting one or two now and then, planted a church down in the heart of São Paulo. But a call came from these Christians that were meeting on the southwest side of the city in Parque Santo Antonio, a church that had just sprung up out of the individual activity of some Christians that lived in this area, very close to the favelas, that is the slums, and it didn't look like a very prospective place for the gospel to be preached, but it proved to be otherwise. It proved to be a very right place. And they worked there. And they built a building there. And as a consequence of that call, Dennis Allen came over. Gary Fisher was about to leave the country. Not too long afterward, and Dennis came over, and they talked to him about coming and working with them. They thought they'd gone as far as they could go, and they needed some help. Humility of spirit, determination to do right, determination to carry their own load. By that time, they'd built their own building. They were carrying on their own work as best they could, recognized, however, that there was something missing here that they longed for and wanted but could not obtain for themselves, and so they asked him to help. Consequence of that is that the church today numbers about 180 in attendance or more. But you're not concerned about that yet, are you? You want to hear about the fellow we sent down there, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, and then we'll get on with the rest of it. But I want to tell you this much. We sent him down there for a purpose, so that he could preach the gospel in Brazil. There are, at this particular time, two American families living in Brazil. And it's not to say that American families have to be everywhere the gospel can run and be glorified, because that's not true. But at this stage, in the work of the gospel in Brazil, it's going to take all hands and the cook just to follow up on the opportunities. The works will leave this coming summer to come back to the States. They are in anguish in many ways about it. But he can't stay any longer. His visa will not allow him to. But they love the country and the people and the opportunities. A young couple will come down in the spring of the year. He's been there for a year when he was single. He's since married, and they'll work alongside Dennis and Benita and his family, but he will not be yet well equipped with the language, as Carl is not yet well equipped, though he has proven himself faster at the task than anybody else that's gone into Brazil. But he will not be able to preach publicly or teach public Bible classes for months, because to converse in Portuguese is one thing, but to deal with the subtleties of the gospel and difficult questions of the scripture easily will take time, and Carl realizes that. But the spirit that took him there is the spirit that I'd like to foster in all of us. It may never get us further than the east side of Louisville, and that'll be all right, because we'll find places to work right here and people to teach the gospel to. But we've got to have that spirit, that longing, that adventurous concern for lost people everywhere. And this church, concerned as we are for people in this part of the world, have been concerned with what's going on in other places and the need that exists there And of course, it'd be wonderful to make it very personal. Well, about Carl, I want to show you the palatial suite in which he now lives. Now, that is the front door. I mean, that iron gate is the width of the house, which belongs to one of the deacons and his wife there and their children. And Carl is somewhere behind there. That's where you put the car, if you've got one, in behind those gates, and you lock them and you leave, because there are people who would probably relieve you of the necessity of having a car if you didn't do that. This is Carl as he stands on his own front doorstep. His room is to his right as he stands there looking down that stairway. Somewhere up there between 16 feet, probably the total width of the lot. He's on the back side where one of the other members of the family were living until they decided to spring loose and to go elsewhere. And that's where Carl has his place. And as he is there, he looks out, and this is what he sees from that particular vantage point at his front door, looking out at the jam-packed population of Parque San Antonio, which surrounds him. He's only about a block away from the building, and so he can get there without too much difficulty. I almost didn't want to put this in, but I decided we've got to be truthful about it. I want you to see what kind of spacious quarters he's got inside. That is his kitchen and his office and his dining room. Other than that, he has a room of similar size which serves as his bedroom. And that's how it is. You want to be careful of these preachers that go into the foreign work and live sumptuously on the land, like it's obvious he probably is doing. Let me tell you, though, about the Brazilians. They do not believe that a single young man could possibly survive by himself. All Brazilian sons, until they marry, stay at home, and sometimes they still stay at home and live in another part of the house. And so Brazilian women do not believe that any man could possibly survive by himself, which means that our brother has a lot of these good women looking after him, fearful that he may not have enough to eat, consequence of which, he's becoming a very much bigger man than he used to be. This is his landlady there. I lost my hand. That is his landlady, the wife of one of the deacons. And this is the wife of one of the elders, and then we have others. But I'm just saying, these are but a few of those who are looking after. He is going to have to take care of himself, I think, in that regard, and convince them that maybe he could take care of himself without being fed like a fattening hog. Well, there he is. And he loves it there, he says. He tells us he loves it there. He goes around the city on a bus. That can be an experience, but it doesn't bother him. And he tracks where he does not take the bus. You've seen this press before, but I want to sort of retrace my steps. This is the building of the Parque Church as it now is. It's grown some since I was there 2 years ago, because they didn't have this third floor. This is the three floors of classrooms. And this is the auditorium here, and above it, classrooms, and far behind it, the apartment where Dennis and Benita live. They made that available to him, but they're going to have to tear that out. Dennis is going to build his own house in Sao Paulo, because the auditorium is getting too small now, and they're going to have to enlarge in order to take care of that. But you see the street there. It's a rather wealthy middle-class neighborhood, as you can see, with all that finery and everything around it. But those lots cost a lot of money, because there's not much land in that particular place. And I didn't get a recent picture of the church there, But this one will suffice 2 years ago, much larger than this now. That's inside the building. You can see them sitting there, much larger than that. And the neighborhood, as you look out over it, this will give you some sense of it. You're almost standing on the back top. That's on top of the meeting house. And looking back to the rear, to that crammed population of people inside every one of those houses, a lot of people. They don't have 3 rooms of the bath each to himself. I mean, these people are crowded together everywhere and just waiting for somebody to come by and ask them about the gospel. While we were there, I took off to the north 1,000 miles, and Wilma stayed back in Sao Paulo, and she worked alongside other sisters there with some of the women. And so women said, that was in the classroom. You can see it wasn't exactly capacious. They were all jammed in there. And they studied together for about 3 hours on the Saturday while we were gone about the spiritual life. Here is one of the elders who spoke, and a wife of another elder spoke during that session, and Roma joined in with that group. But interested and concerned, to say the least. Here's something that will challenge you. Every month, the Parque Church sends out 16,000 papers or little magazines to the people who they have made contact with through Bible correspondence courses. 1 week while we were there, they got almost 8,000 pieces of mail in response to the things they're doing. And this is a group of the brethren in one classroom as they are taking care of folding these things. And it's a job, I'm telling you. You have to slip something inside the other, and the young people are involved too. It's a group of them. They're in the church. They're involved taking care of folding the board, and then they have to label all of them as well. I'm impressed with those young people. They seem to do an immense amount of work. Here's a few more. That room filled up a lot more. You can see Wilma there in the background. The room filled up. I mean, we had to do something to show that we were worth being there. So we were busy and engaged in taking care of that job along with the rest of them. And even though we worked several hours that evening, we didn't get the job done. And it took 3 or 4 more days before that was done. That is significant work. In fact, the publishing that's been done there has been the most powerful instrument to reach out to the country, and it was that made possible the beginning of the church in Jequié, which is 1,000 miles to the north of Sao Paulo. They saw that they had a number of Bible correspondence course students in that city, which is tropical. The Tropic of Capricorn runs just between Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. And you know that means everything within that is tropical. And it goes all the way up to equatorial when you get to the Amazon basin, the southern part. This is Gerson, and it's interesting. It's interesting to me in Brazil. I don't know the name, the family names of any of these people. They never give them. And then you have to distinguish between this Marcus and that Marcus, or whoever you, this is, that's all you know. And maybe it's because the name is about that long and they don't want to bother with giving you the whole story. But this is Gerson. Gerson was a member of one of the churches in Sao Paulo. There are about 4 churches in Sao Paulo that had grown out of the Parque Church in the main, although one of them was planted. At least one of them was planted by Dennis and Gary when they went down there. But the Gerson was a member of the church in Colonia, which is on the northeast side of Sao Paulo. In fact, the building of the church there, the meeting house, the church built on his land, still his land, still built on his land. And on that property is a half-finished house. And that's his. He had worked and bought the property. He had worked in the church there and helped in the teaching. Until finally the church at Parque said, come and work with us for a while. and we will provide your needs. And he did, and developed so rapidly that when this sudden opportunity occurred for the church to be planted in Jacquet, he was sent by the Parquet Church to that place to preach the gospel. And he and Edna, and that's Edna, wonderful girl, and Jerrison, a wonderful man, and this is Jessany. Never heard that name before, but she's a live wire, I'll tell you. And this is Andre, sweet, quiet, docile child. And that's Mateos on the end. And Mateos is I tell you, he's lovable. And eyes shining bright all the time, and he just can't quit talking because he's got so much to tell. And wonderful family, and they're there in this city where at the beginning about 12, 13, 14 people were baptized when they went up there to talk to the students of the Bible Correspondence Course. And a large number of these people came out of one denominational church, a Baptist church in that city, who were disturbed about things and concerned about the direction of things. And so they came. This is a picture of one of the meetings of the church. Now, I have to tell you about the churches in Brazil. They usually meet twice in the week, other than Sunday. They don't meet on Monday and Wednesday and Saturday. In the church at Parquet, they have a special class on Monday for those who want to do advanced study, men and women. And then on Wednesday night, they get the whole church come together. On Saturday night, they have another meeting. And then on Sunday, they have two meetings. But this is an assembly of the church in Jacquet. They have an upstairs hall. It's an upper room. And nicely furnished and equipped. And there, I suppose, between 40 and 50 get together there. But the interesting thing to me about that group is there are so many whole families. Now this is, you may have seen them in the large picture, that's Marcus and Katia. And their three sons, wonderful boys, Gabriel and Pedro and Marquinhos, which means little Mark or little Marcus. So this is the most able Bible student in the congregation. And this was taken in his home because we went there for, he wanted to have a special study about some things, which characterizes the Brazilian Christians. I don't know that they're thinking wisdom will come from afar. If they did, they probably disappointed somewhat. But the point is they want you to come to their home and study the Bible with them. They don't want just a visit. They like to see you, but they want to sit down and study the Bible. I was, aside from the public preaching that I did while I was there, I had a number of personal studies with families and in homes. And that's what Marcus and Katia wanted that day for a special study. And yet we had preached Thursday night twice. Each of us had preached. And then we had preached on Friday twice. Each of us preached twice on Friday. And then we got together on Saturday and preached twice, each of us. And on Sunday, it was twice again. And yet they still wanted to study more. Here's something that might help you, brother. These are some of the men that I just caught standing there. Each one of those men, wife's a Christian, and some of the family members too. And what this tells you is, I think about the jailer and his family, and I think about Cornelius and his family, and we wonder how in the world they got all these families to serve God. Well, I'll tell you, it happened right there. Families. I counted six whole families that were together in Christ and serving God. There were a lot of visitors during that trip we made up to Jacquet. These two young men came from Ipiaiu. That sounds like something else. I thought Ipiaiu, but that's not the right pronunciation. Ipiaiu, which is at least an hour and a half bus ride from Jacquet. And they came and spent the night with Jerrison so they could be there for these studies, because he'd been traveling that on the bus up there, Ipiaiu, to study with about four people. There's a Christian up there and these interested and concerned young men. And at each evening, we had a number of women and men who were not Christians. I couldn't tell they weren't Christians. Nobody told me that they were not disciples. They acted like they were disciples. They were there virtually every meeting that we had. And this is the kind of opportunity that exists there. It is a rich opportunity. It's a tropical place there. They have every kind of fruit in the world in Jequié. And I wish I could show you a picture of the actual city, but I don't have one. What this is saying is that there are a lot of people down there who are open to the gospel, ready to study, take it seriously. Their lives are empty too, just like lives of people all across the world. But it just so happens at this moment in history, there is an openness in Brazil. I don't know how long it will last, but I am certainly glad that we have had the disposition in this congregation to send one of our own number down there to preach the gospel. You say, well, that's far away. I know Carl, that's all I know down there. It's true. But I want to tell you something. You could go to Brazil if you wanted to. You could go to Brazil if you wanted to and spend 2 weeks down there. Walk among the brethren, and they'd love you. That's what Bruce Shearer did over in New Southbury. He went down with Gary and did his thing. And you say, well, what good could he do? He didn't speak a word of Portuguese. Well, he could say, oi. I mean, that did it. And his personality. And he ate everything that's been grown in Brazil for the last 100 years. He even ate a cashew that he shouldn't have eaten. Because cashew is a fruit. I didn't know that either. But cashew is a fruit, and there's a little nut that grows out of the end of the fruit. But you dasn't eat it. Because it's got an acid in it that will burn you like fire. And that's what Bruce did. He got that nut, decided he was going to eat that cashew nut, and he just touched it to his lips before somebody said, don't do that. But he impressed those people by his concern and his interest and his openness. And they were encouraged to think that he went down there and spent that time with them, even though they struggled just to communicate. We go everywhere else in the world for every other kind of reason, don't we? Spend a lot of money, too. It just seems to me that every now and then, it would be grand if we set aside some time to go someplace, maybe where they spoke our language or where we could understand what they were saying. But even if we don't, we could go there and let those brothers and sisters, precious and beloved as they are, know that we care about them and the gospel, and that we're in one family. It was amazing to me this time. It was the second trip, but that was the first trip I'd ever made to Jequié, and those people were embracing me like I was a long-lost brother. And it was not because they thought that here comes the rich American who may get us some money. They don't ask for that. May the Lord bless them. Because things that money will destroy, money cannot buy back. They're only asking for the gospel and the opportunity to shoulder the load themselves as best they're able to reach their country. It will be Brazilians who will reach Brazil at last, and we will have done our part. Why is it that we have an obligation in these times? Well, because we're where we are. Because we live in the United States, which is, at this time, let it be said, for good or for ill, is the most influential country in the world politically and economically. And it's rich. And this is where we live. And we can go places that other people are not financially able to go. And that puts upon us a responsibility. If it does not put upon us a responsibility to go to those places, it puts upon us a responsibility to see that somebody goes and that we should help them to go. That's the reason it's right for this church to do what it does in supporting men in other places. But that won't satisfy our responsibility here. It's been a delight to me this last quarter to sit down for several weeks with a number of brothers and sisters in a class entitled Going with Jesus Among the Lost. And they've been such an encouragement. As they have spoken to one another, and we've shared together the things that we're trying to do, and they're trying. And finding encouragement in the process. I have said, and I'm not a cynic, but if 10 or 15% of this congregation were aggressively engaged, and I include myself in that challenge, in trying to speak to others about the gospel, each according to his ability, it would revolutionize things. And I hope that we can enlarge this. I believe we have some young people in this congregation who have that kind of spirit. And I surely want to see that grow. And I believe we've got some others that do. And I think we have a number of people who would like to. And what we need to do is just link up with each other and pair off somehow and encourage each other in this task of trying to reach people with the gospel. I didn't talk about how many people were converted while I was down there because I only saw one baptized, and that was in the dead of night, it seemed like, in the house of a man in the northwest side of Sao Paulo, where he announced that night they were going to start a new congregation meeting there in the middle of January. And it was in, as I said, a horse tank, and it was cold that night. But the man said, I waited too long. That's what they told me, he said, after we had had our study together. And so it was his brother's house, and it was his brother who was influencing the beginning of this new congregation on that part of the city. And there's a need for one in the northwest part of the city, too. And God willing, that may be achieved. But I wish you could meet those people. They are so open. They don't howdy much in Brazil, I would tell you that. You needn't expect them to shout at you going down the street. But then they don't do that much in New York City either. Now, if you get out in the country where Joe and Beth Works are in Indaiatuba, which is a city of 130,000 people, it's a quiet, beautiful spot, lovely, pastoral sort of scene that has a General Motors plant, a Toyota plant, and a Mercedes-Benz plant. And people are being drawn in there for jobs. There's a 15% unemployment rate in Brazil. Opportunity there, where Joe will be leaving. And Moji Marim, which is on beyond Indaiatuba to the north. There's another congregation. And a man who runs a office supplier there who's a devout Christian. He's not too great a teacher, but he can contact people to a fare you well. And the day after I left, he had talked to some fellow who was 200 kilometers up country in the store about his situation, and the fellow had gotten in a study, and Joe Works came over, and they continued to study nearly to midnight, and he was baptized and went on his way rejoicing. And as Joe said, there's another one of those Ethiopian eunuch stories, and the Lord will have to write the last two verses of that chapter like he did the other one. But opportunity is there. And I surely am grateful for the privilege of going. And I worked Dennis Allen to death because he was preaching and having to interpret for me at the same time. And he did twice as much work as I did. And the Lord bless him. He is a significant worker there. You may have some questions to ask me about the work in Brazil. I hope you will. I hope you have interest enough to inquire further about it. But what I'm most concerned about, it's what we do in the east end of Louisville. That's what I'm really most concerned about. And I believe you are. I do believe that, and it's not because a new millennium is coming. We get in positions as individuals, and we get in positions as congregations where it's sort of a moment of opportunity when we either move ahead and take advantage of things that are happening, or we sort of slough off to another plateau or maybe decline. I think we're ready for another upward spiral here. That's my sense of it. That we're beginning to reach some more people. I mean, you work hard a long time and no results. But when the results start coming in, that stirs you, doesn't it? Stirs me. And again, we know that preaching the gospel changes the lives of people. Makes a difference. And those who are changed rejoice because their hearts are full. And then we remember what we are and what Christ has filled our hearts with. And we want to move to do more. And I believe we will. I have my moments. Try to keep my mouth shut when I do. When I get concerned about things, you know, and I say, well, I don't know. We don't seem to be doing that much, and things are not moving very much. But, you know, if we just stay at it, they will. If we'll just be patient and dogged and keep on doing right and living right, which is as important as anything we will do as Christians to reach the lost, we have got to present to this world the image of the transformed life that reflects the light of Christ. That is important. And then from that posture, we can speak to other people about their lives and the opportunities that are found in Jesus Christ. We're going to sing an invitation here. Had an excellent lesson this morning. I really thought somebody would probably respond to the invitation. I always pray for it. But, you know, it's time to grow up. Time to get a hold of our lives. Time to serve the Lord with all that's in us. And if we're not doing that, then we need to repent. We need to change our hearts and our lives. And if you're not a Christian, you're living your life as a waste. It's a bit wasted. Wasted. I understand what I'm saying when I say that. It is utterly wasted. Because it is going nowhere and accomplishing nothing. Think of it. What are you accomplishing in your life that's going to last beyond this one? What are you accomplishing in your life that's going to prepare you to meet eternity? What are you accomplishing in your life that's going to reconcile you to God? Make a difference in the lives of others in terms of their eternity. What are you doing? And the Lord is calling you. The Lord is entreating you to come and serve Him. And if only you would tonight, while we stand together and sing.